The end. That's our focus on this first broadcast of Echoes of a Century. I'm King David McKenzie. When was the last time you were greeted with a goodbye? In this instance, from Mary Hopkin. I'm King David McKenzie, and this is the first program in a new series titled Echoes of a Century. It's a very simple idea. Since the 20th century is the first from which we have recorded sound to document its entire span, why not utilize it to tell its story? Of course, we can't use all of it in a single 54-minute stretch each week, but we certainly can have a bit of fun digging up some unusual pieces of it. And often it'll be something a bit more sober, such as the next stretch of material. What we're about to hear is the end of the Nazi regime in Germany. The first piece of material is from the last broadcast in April of 1945 by the infamous Lord Haw Haw, a British expatriate named William Joyce, who had tried to bring fascism to the United Kingdom in the 30s, and when that failed, fled to Germany just before the Nazi invasion of Poland. Joyce broadcast English-language propaganda back to the UK. At the end of April 1945, Joyce and his engineers were in Hamburg, while his bosses, Hitler and Goebbels, committed suicide in Berlin. When news of the fall of Berlin arrived, Joyce was obviously anticipating his post-war fate. He was the only Briton executed for broadcasting for the Nazis. He got thoroughly drunk, organized his equally drunk technicians, and recorded one last 10-minute program. We'll hear the last couple of minutes of that program. A BBC reporter punctuating the end of Joyce's bizarre broadcasting career a few days later by transmitting to London from the same facilities. And General Sir Bernard Law Montgomery announcing the unconditional surrender of the Nazi regime in May of 1945.
Now, in this, the most serious time of our modern age, I beg you to realize that the fight is on. I would only say that the men who have died in the Battle of Berlin have given their lives to show that whatever else happens, Germany will live. No coercion, no oppression, no measures of tyranny that any foreign foe can introduce will shatter Germany. Germany will live because the people of Germany have in them the secret of life, endurance, will, and purpose. And therefore I say to you, in these last words, you may not hear from me again for a few months. I say, Es lebe Deutschland. Heil Hitler. And farewell.
This is Germany calling. Calling for the last time from Station Hamburg. And tonight, you will not hear views on the news by William Joyce. For Mr. Joyce, Lord Haw-Haw to most of us in Britain, has been most unfortunately interrupted in his broadcasting career, and at present has left rather hurriedly for a vacation, an extremely short vacation if the Second British Army has anything to do with it, maybe to Denmark, another point north. And in his place, this is the BBC, calling all the long-suffering listeners in Britain who for 6 years have had to put up with the acid tones of Mr. Joyce speaking over the same wavelength that I'm using to talk to you now. I'm seated in front of Lord Haw-Haw's own microphone, or rather, the microphone he used in the last 3 weeks of his somewhat checkered career.
The German command agrees to the surrender of all German armed forces in Holland, in northwest Germany, including the Frisian Islands and Heligoland and all other islands, in Schleswig-Holstein and in Denmark, to the Commander-in-Chief, 21st Army Group. This to include all naval ships in these areas. These forces to lay down their arms and to surrender unconditionally. All hostilities on land, on sea, or in the air by German forces in the above areas to cease at 0800 hours, British double summer time, on Saturday, the 5th of May, 1945.
I have a weird song about a mummy. It's actually a true story about a man who fell off a train in Dallas, Texas. Black man, had one leg, cut the other leg off, and died. So he was mummified. They did that back in 1913 when it happened, and they waited for relatives to come and claim him, but nobody came. And the carnival passed through, and they claimed him. And he toured with the carnival for about 35 years, posthumously. It's a true story. So he was buried. And in 1973, and I read a little article about him, and I wrote this song, and then a year later, when the song came out, a guy stepped forward and donated a headstone to Andrew McCrew. And so the fourth verse of this song was carved in granite, and is now at his head, and he became sort of a legendary figure in the black community in Dallas, Texas, symbolic of the man, the black man who couldn't be killed. And there's a whole lot of other stuff about it, which I can't go into now, it's too complicated. But the song tells a story. And the chorus is easy, and if you feel like singing about a mummy, just join right in. There was a mummy at the fair, all crumpled in a folding chair. The people passed but didn't care that the mummy was a man. So tell me if you can, who are you? Who are you? Where have you been? Where are you going to? Well, Andrew McCrew must have lost his way, 'cause though he died long ago, he was buried today. Down on Nightmare Alley, where the shady people sway, a hobo came a-hiking on a salty summer day. Well, he hopped a freight in Dallas, and he rode it out of sight. But on a turn he slipped, and he lost his grip, and he fell into the night. Oh, who are you? Who are you? Where have you been? Where are you going to? Well, Andrew McCrew must have lost his way, 'cause though he died long ago, he was buried today. Well, Andrew had one leg of wood, the other leg was small. When he fell off of the train that night, he found he had no legs at all. Well, they found him in a thicket, and the undertaker came, and they mummified his body for a relative to claim. Have lost his way, 'cause though he died long ago, he was buried today. But no one came to claim him until the carnival passed through. The carnies took him to their tent, and they decided what to do. Well, they dressed him in a worn-out tux, and they put him on a stand, and millions saw the legend called the famous Mummy Man. Oh, who are you? Who are you? Though he died long ago, he was buried today. Well, what a way to live a life, and what a way to die. Left to live a living death with no one left to cry. Petrified amazement, a wonder beyond words, a man who found more life in death than life gave him at birth. Oh, who are you? Who are you? Where have you been? Where are you going to? Well, McCrew must have lost his way, 'cause though he died long ago, he was buried today. that they could go, whose lives are lost to living and performing for the show. Well, at least you got the best of life until it got the best of you. So from all of us to what's left of you, farewell, Andrew McCoo.
Don McLean in front of a British audience in 1976, performing The Legend of Andrew McCrew. We're looking at the end of things on this edition of Echoes of a Century. I'm King David McKenzie. The next recording certainly represents the end of an era. It's from one of the final recording sessions of Special Lieutenant James Reese Europe's 369th United States Infantry Band, for the Pathé Company in March of 1919. Europe had been the last major proponent of ragtime music, and with this recording he had hoped to bridge the audiences for both the dying ragtime trend and the developing jazz craze. Unfortunately, by the time this record was released, Europe had been murdered by one of the band's percussionists, who may or may not be heard on this very recording. And it seemed that when Europe was buried at Arlington National Cemetery, ragtime was buried along with him. Here's Jim Europe with his Hellfighters band, performing one of the Special Lieutenant's very last ragtime masterpieces, the Russian Rag. Thank you.
you have spoken, Brother Emery.
Aye, how will it be?
Well, it'll be as 'twere a mighty rending in the sky, you see, and the mountains will sink and the valleys will rise, and great shall be the tumult thereof, I should think.
Will the veil of the temple be rent in twain?
Well, the veil of the temple's always rather dodgy. Oh. But it should be rent asunder about 2 minutes before we see the sign of the manifest flying whatnots up in the sky.
And will there be a mighty wind then?
Certainly there'll be a mighty wind, if the word of God is anything to go by.
And will this wind be so mighty as to lay low the mountains of the earth?
I can't hear a blind word you say. You're speaking too softly for the human ear, which is what I'm equipped with, so you'll have to speak a bit louder, I think.
This
no better, is it? I ask you to speak louder, you speak softer. A strange reaction from a follower. Or perhaps I'm very old-fashioned. Perhaps I'm very old-fashioned, expecting you to speak louder.
Yes, you are.
Come along. Come along, we haven't got all day to the end of the world. We've heard that bit. We've all heard "Will this wind?" We've heard "Will this wind?" enough, thank you. Don't want to hear "Will this wind?" again. Will this wind? What is what we want to know? What will this wind? Don't say "Will this wind?" again. That'd be a most tedious experience. What will this wind?
Will this wind be so mighty?
Be so mighty
as to lay low.
As to lay low.
The mountains.
The what? Earth, yes. Will this wind be so mighty as to lay low the mountains of the earth? No. It will not be quite as mighty as that. That is why we've come up on the mountain, you stupid nit, to be safe. Here we shall be safe. Safe as houses.
But what happened to the houses?
Oh, well, naturally the houses will all be swept away and consumed by the fire what is dancing on the firmament. 7 nights, I don't
know. All right, then, when will it be, this end of which you have spoken?
When?
In about 30 seconds' time, according to the very ancient pyramidic scrolls and the Ingersoll watch.
Suppose we'd better compose ourselves.
Yes, prepare for the end of the world. 15 seconds.
Have you got the picnic basket?
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Now is the end. Perish the world.
It was GMT, wasn't it? Well, it's not quite the conflagration we'd been banking on. Never mind, lads. Same time tomorrow. We must get a winner one day.
I am reminded at this point of a fellow I used to know whose name was Henry. Only to give you an idea of what an individualist he was, he spelled it H-E-N-3-R-Y. The three was silent, you see. Henry was financially independent, having inherited his father's tar and feather business, and was therefore able to devote his full time to such intellectual pursuits as writing. I particularly remember a heartwarming novel of his about a young necrophiliac who finally achieved his boyhood ambition by becoming coroner. The rest of you can look it up when you get home. In addition to writing, he indulged in a good deal of philosophizing. Like so many contemporary philosophers, he especially enjoyed giving helpful advice to people who were happier than he was. And one particular bit of advice which I recall, which is the reason I bring up this whole dreary story, is something he said once before they took him away to the Massachusetts State Home for the Bewildered. He said, "Life is like a sewer. What you get out of it depends on what you put into it." It's always seemed to me that this is precisely the sort of dynamic, positive thinking that we so desperately need today in these trying times of crisis and universal brouhaha. And so with this in mind, I have here a modern, positive, dynamic, uplifting song in the tradition of the great old revival hymns. This one might more accurately be termed a survival hymn. It goes like this. When you attend the funeral, it is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. Oh, what a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all go together when we go, all suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. Oh, we will all fry together when we fry. We'll be French fried potatoes by and by. There will be no more misery when the world is our rotisserie. Yes, we all will fry together when we fry. Down by the old maelstrom, there'll be a storm before the calm, and we will all bake together when we bake. There'll be nobody present at the wake, with complete participation in that grand incineration, nearly 3 billion hunks of well-done steak. Oh, we will all char together when we char, and let there be no moaning of the bar. Just sing out a tedium when you see that ICBM, and the party will be come as you are. When we burn, there'll be no need to stand and wait your turn. When it's time for the fallout and St. Peter calls us all out, we'll just drop our agendas and adjourn. You will all go directly to your respective Valhallas. Go directly, do not pass, go, do not collect $200. Sutton, every Eskimo. When the air becomes Uranus, we will all go simultaneous. Yes, we all will go together when we all go together. Yes, we all will go together when we go.
A couple of satires on the end of the world, first from the Broadway cast album of Beyond the Fringe, with Peter Cook in the lead there, and the final cut from An Evening Wasted with Tom Lehrer. The end is what we're concerned with this week on Echoes of a Century. I'm King David Mackenzie. The following items are pieces of broadcasting history from just under a couple of months apart. First, we have the closing moments of the final radio broadcast of Amos and Andy on November 25, 1960. This is particularly notable, not simply because creators Freeman Gostin and Charles Correll had played the title characters on three popular radio series for over 32 years by this point. It was one of the very few times they ever appeared on a network radio broadcast outside of those characterizations, appearing as their real-life selves. By this time, the series had become a disc jockey program, the Amos and Andy Music Hall, and as the last piece of music, they had their former studio organist, Gaylord Carter, come back one last time and perform their original theme tune, The Perfect Song. At this point, their announcer was Jim Amici, the brother of actor Don Amici and the one-time star of his own radio show, Jack Armstrong, the Old American Boy. The new format that Gostin and Correll mentioned that they planned to follow was a cartoon series, Calvin and the Colonel, which ran on ABC television during the 1962-63 season and was surprisingly popular in Australia, but not here in the United States. The radio career of Correll and Gostin had started during the Warren Harding administration and ended just as John Kennedy was elected president, and the piece we'll hear after that is in part about Kennedy's inauguration. And it's because of Kennedy that this was the final commercial broadcast of the distinguished commentator Edward R. Murrow. It took place over CBS on January the 22nd, 1961, and Murrow had been scheduled to return to the air the following Sunday. But in the interim, President Kennedy had appointed Murrow to head up the United States Information Agency, the parent bureau of the Voice of America. Murrow died of cancer in 1965 before he had a chance to return to private sector broadcasting.
Gentlemen, here are Amos and Andy, or as you know in real life, Freeman Gostin and Charles Correll.
Hi, folks.
Hello from me, too. Well, Freeman, why don't you start this thing off?
Well, friends, tonight's Music Hall program, as you may know, will be the last program of this series. I say series because we have, over a period of years, been on the air with several series or formats. Well, just to give you a thumbnail sketch, Charlie and I started off many years ago as a singing team, both on radio and records. After a couple of years, they caught on to us, and we stopped singing, and then we started doing a daily 15-minute dialect show in the Middle West out of Chicago, Illinois, known as Sam and Henry.
That's right, Freeman, and after 2 years with Sam and Henry, we changed the series and started from coast to coast with a 15-minute daily show, Amos and Andy. After a good many years as Amos and Andy with the 15-minute daily program, we concluded that series and shortly thereafter changed to a half-hour program on radio with a large orchestra, guest stars, a singing choir, and this show was broadcast once a week.
During the years we were on the air with the once-a-week half-hour radio series, the Amos and Andy television shows were started with other actors. Almost 100 half-hour TV shows were made. Now, at the conclusion of the half-hour radio series, which was broadcast once a week, we then started the present music hall program, broadcasting 5 times a week, each program lasting approximately 30 minutes.
And if I'm not mistaken, Freeman, I think the music hall program has been on the air almost 7 years. And tonight, ladies and gentlemen, as we said before, the program that we have just finished concludes the Amos and Andy Music Hall series.
For the past few months, we have been working on another idea which we hope to present to you in the not-too-distant future. It will be entirely different from anything we have done in the past. And it will be the 7th time we have changed our style of program. But now, ladies and gentlemen, we want to thank you, yes, you, who have made all of these programs possible. We want to thank CBS and all of the nice people there who have worked on the music hall for almost 7 years. And we are very grateful to all of the fine actors who have helped us. And we are especially indebted to our fine writers, Joe Connolly and Bob Mosher, who have done a great job for us for the past 15 years. So instead of saying goodbye, we want to say so long for now. We are very grateful again to you.
And just let me say here that when we do come back, we sincerely hope you'll be with us. Thank you, and good night.
Good night, friends.
During the past week, we have heard 2 major speeches, one by the oldest president in our history, the other by the youngest. Both presidential speeches were prepared during a period of transition, which has been carried out with unprecedented cooperation and goodwill, and in the hope that the words spoken might find a dignified resting place in history. 8 years ago, in his first inaugural, President Eisenhower said that we were living in a time of tempest. His speech was devoted almost exclusively to foreign policy. In his farewell message to the nation, he said, "Crises there will continue to be." But in his final message, he devoted much time to domestic affairs, or rather, to the impact of the world situation upon our society. The Eisenhower concern, as I read it, was a fear that we may lose our liberties while preparing to defend them. He reminded us that our military organization is unprecedented. He counseled us to guard against the unwarranted influence of the military-industrial complex. He was, in fact, suggesting that the machine may get beyond human or political control, that we could reach a point where, in fact, things would be in the saddle and ride mankind. And then the retiring president went on to issue another solemn warning. In speaking of the technological revolution, he said, "Research has become central. It also becomes more formalized, complex, and costly." In short, he warned that our limited supply of scholars might come to spend their time looking for what the government asked them to look for and was willing to pay for, rather than pursuing the truth wherever that pursuit might lead them. President Eisenhower issued another warning when he spoke of the danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific technological elite. In that phrase, he appeared to be warning of the real danger that as our technology and our weaponry become more complex, more sophisticated, more difficult to understand, more baffling and bewildering to the layman, the individual citizen may abdicate his responsibility, come to believe that he is not wise enough to exercise the power of choice, and that he had best leave the whole matter of running the country to the experts who do understand, or at least claim to understand. President Kennedy's inaugural address could be summed up by the quotation, "Difficulty is an excuse history never accepts." He did not minimize the seriousness of the times. He promised that we should pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, or oppose any foe in order to ensure the survival and success of liberty. He promised that we would cherish old allies, and he promised new nations that they would not pass from one form of colonial control into a far more iron tyranny. By implication, he welcomed the neutral states into the society of the free, so long as they are truly neutral. There was a special pledge for Latin America to help cast off the chains of poverty and to see to it that the Western Hemisphere remains the master of its own house. The new president asked that both sides begin anew the quest for peace, remembering that civility is not a sign of weakness and that sincerity is always subject to proof. Let us never negotiate out of fear, but let us never fear to negotiate. There is a word of warning for those who expect great speed. All these things will not be done in 100 or 1,000 days. Perhaps not in our lifetime. But, said the president, let us begin.
Tell me why you're crying, my son. I know you're frightened like everyone. Is it the thunder in the distance you fear? Will it help if I stay very near? I am here. And if you take my hand, my son, all will be well when the day is done. And if you take my hand, my son, all will be well when the day is done. Son, you shall inherit what mankind has done. In a world filled with sorrow and woe, if you ask me why this is so, I really don't know. And if you take my hand, my son, see what we all must disguise through your loving eyes. And if you take my hand, my son, my son, all will be well in a day. If you take my hand, my son, all will be well when the day is done. Day is done. Day is done.
The last hit single by Peter, Paul, and Mary, fittingly titled, Day Is Done. On this initial broadcast of Echoes of a Century, we're looking at the end of things. I'm King David McKenzie. Although the title of this next recording suggests a beginning, New Year's at Old Trinity, by the Haydn Quartet, most of it is set before midnight on a December 31st, thus fitting more with the end of the year than a beginning. It's supposed to depict a celebration at Old Trinity, the church built in 1846 at the corner of Broadway and Wall Street in Manhattan. However, not only was it recorded not in New York, but in the Camden, New Jersey studios of the Victor Talking Machine Company. It was cut at a session on July 7, 1904, thus closer to Independence Day than New Year's Eve.
Hello, Jimmy, old boy. Here's Jimmy.
Why, hello, boys. I never saw you fellas so near a church before. Say, boys, I've got a good story to tell you.
Well, let's have it.
Let her go, Jimmy.
Well, you know that Jones girl with the black eyes.
Why, say, Jimmy, who gave them to her? Hold on, boys. The chimes are going to play. Well, Jimmy, how about the black-eyed girl?
Well, sir, that girl was engaged to three fellows at once.
Here, here. Move on there. Don't block up the sidewalk.
Come out the street, boys, and I'll finish the story. Now, you know what a flirt that girl was.
Ah, get out of the way there. You guys want to get killed?
And
it seems that there are no more songs. The rebels, they were here, they came beside the door. They told me that the moon was a scar is in the sky, it's time to say goodbye. A whale is on the beach, he's dying. A white flag in my hand, and a white bone in the sand. And it seems that there are no more songs. Hello.
Phil Oakes with No More Songs, the final cut on his final studio album, Phil Oakes' Greatest Hits. And there are no more songs on this initial broadcast of Echoes of a Century. This program was an independent production by Doll Shoe Radio Creations, copyright 2005. Produced in the studios of WLSU La Crosse, an affiliate of Wisconsin Public Radio on the La Crosse campus of the University of Wisconsin. I'm King David McKenzie. Thanks for listening. I hope you'll join us again at the same time next week. Until then, remember, fear and God do not inhabit the same space.